Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight is award-winning journalist and author Craig Pittman, and we're talking about his latest book, The State You're In, Florida Men, Florida Women, and Other Wildlife. Craig, welcome back to the show. It's such a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks. Good to talk to you, too.
Now, I want to start out right now. You're a native Floridian. We have to emphasize that.
Yes. So if we're interrupted by a Fish and Wildlife Service agent attaching a tracker to me, that's why. I'm an endangered species.
And you know, as you say in the preface to this book, you know, everybody, you're sort of tired as a native Floridian of Florida being called like the punchline state.
Well, I wouldn't say tired of it. I just feel like that doesn't cover the whole story.
Yeah, there's a lot more. I mean, let's face it. The essays, for the most part, that you cover are deeply weird.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them are very sensitive, and I we'll talk about those. But what you really, I think the quote you use is, it's really a very interesting state, or the most interesting state.
We are the most interesting state. We can defend that. We can't defend Sunshine State. We just can't. We get a lot of rain here. Other states get more sunshine than we do. But we can defend being the most interesting state. That's easy.
Do you have any kind of theory about why it all ends up in Florida?
Yeah. Actually, one is we've undergone this wrenching demographic change where in 1940 we were the least populated southern state, and now we're the third most populous. We actually passed New York in 2014, and we're not evenly spread over the whole peninsula. You know, we're kind of crammed into that 30-mile-wide swath along the coast and along I-4 where the theme parks are. So you jam that many people into that small a space in that short a period of time, and they're coming from all different cultures and backgrounds and languages. And it's just natural they'd start, you know, ramming into each other's cars and chasing each other with machetes and arguing over whose dog pooped on whose lawn. And the background that these people bring, you know, we've got ex-CIA agents who retired to Florida because they fell in love with it while they were training for the Bay of Pigs. We've got retired circus people who, you know, brought their acts here during the winter. We've got snowbirds. We've got monkey breeders. We've got spam kings, strip club moguls, you know, uniformed Scientologists, and, 29 electoral college votes.
Whoa. So, did you say uniformed?
Yeah, they wear their white uniforms through downtown Clearwater.
I didn't realize there was a uniform.
Yeah, it's all ocean-based, Navy-based. So they all dress up like they're in the Navy.
He's still on the Sea Orc, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. Now, these are all pieces that have appeared before in print because you work
online.
Yep. And because you're a major journalist. You're still a major journalist.
Yeah, I write a weekly column for the Florida Phoenix about Florida environmental issues, which I get to use all my bad puns and corny dad jokes and obscure pop culture references.
You love it.
I do.
And that's what comes through on these essays. And I want to mention that what's great about them is they're so varied. And there are hilarious essays and just crazy essays. There's a lot of sort of weird, sleazy characters that you seem to love and gravitate towards.
Sure.
but it's always with a twist, like somebody who's like sort of a known sort of shark. It goes on to become a major environmental person. And that's what I think Florida does. It mixes and it sort of mixes the group up a lot more. So there's unexpected endings.
Yeah, I think so. And people are not what you think they are. Even if you have experienced them one way, they may have changed. The piece on the guy living on death row, he's a different person.
That's
when he was 40.
That's a really touching piece, and it's a really great excuse for abolishing the death penalty, by the way.
Well, the irony to me is the victim's son wasn't mad that he had been there that long. The victim's son actually was happy that he had spent that long on death row because he said, I wanted him to think about it every single day of his life.
Yep. But there's some just jolly great things to read for up, especially when you're up here in New England in winter. I want to talk about the very first essay in the book, which I just love.
Mermaids.
Working for scale. You know, he's got to have the punchline, man. This is nowhere but Florida is there a mermaid business, and it really is huge down there.
Oh, definitely. Well, and we actually have mermaids on the state payroll here.
That was that was the capper for me, is that there's a government job as being a mermaid. That's because Wikibatchee Springs State Park is a state park.
Well, and it used to be a classic roadside attraction.
That's right.
You know, this guy named Newton Perry, who was a Navy frogman, bought the spring, cleared out all the, you know, refrigerators and stuff, built this amphitheater and hired young women to pull on prosthetic tails and swim around and wave at the tourists. And it was big for a long time. Elvis came to visit, other big celebrities. And then in the 2000s, business started to tail off. And so rather than see it bought by a developer or a water bottler, the state stepped in and bought it, and the mermaids thus became state employees. And, you know, and they had to justify spending tax dollars on waterproof lipstick and shell bras.
And it looks good on your resume. But it extends beyond that. I'm reading your article. There's like there's mermaids for hire.
Yes. Yes. And so that became sort of the seed for the industry. But there are now mermaids in, you know, Pensacola and Panama City and Jacksonville and Fort Lauderdale. My favorite one was the woman from Fort Lauderdale who supervises a whole pod of mermaids who do performances
wait a minute.
At the rec
bar.
Is that the official
yes. group name of is a pod of mermaids?
Yes, a group of mermaids is called a pod,
okay.
And it's sort of like whales. And they she said she was great. She actually models her moves on those of, you know, aquatic creatures. And she said, "I'm 47. Thank God, water lifts."
Is she the fire eating mermaid?
Mm-hmm.
That sort of seems like seems like an oxymoron or something like that.
Well, you can't just swim these days. You have to be multitask.
You have to have a gimmick.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's weird because just a couple of years ago, I was down on a beach here, birding, looking at birds, and all of a sudden, this whole crew of photographers and then women with their tails went down and they did the whole mermaid thing, and I never knew that was a thing.
It's a whole big subculture that, you know, a lot of people do it as hobbies. And there's a guy here who calls himself the Mer Tailor, who will make custom designed tails for you, and, you know, based on your measurements, and he sells them for like $5,000 a pop, and he's got a waiting list.
Oh wow.
Yeah. I asked him how he got started. He actually, as a teenager, was a merman at Wikiwachi Springs, but he said he left, and I said, why? And he said, mermaid politics. So there's a phrase you
which
probably
is, which
would
is
not
a
hear
apparently a thing now.
Yes.
It's a lobby. The great thing about your essays I love is it, not in all of them by any means, but there is still the thing about the roadside attraction in Florida. And some of them I remember as a kid, Ross Allen's Reptile Institute. Because you were talking about, I think
book.
It was Jack Rudlow.
Yes.
And talk about that. I mean, that was used to be one of the great things about Florida. It was all those roadside attractions.
Well, it's not in the book, but I recently did a big magazine piece for Flamingo Magazine here in Florida about Ross Allen and his Reptile Institute and how he would go out in the woods and catch snakes and bring them back and milk them for the tourists. And then he had a rattlesnake canning factory. He would can the meat.
That's right. I had a can of Ross Allen's rattlesnake meat.
There you go. And there were lots of roadside attractions around the state, and there's a few of them still kind of on, and one of them is Jack Rudlow's Gulf Marine Science Lab up in Panacea, where the kids come in by the busload. You know, they go to my kids went to Tallahassee to see the state capitol, and on the way back they stopped in Panacea and toured all the aquarium there, and, you know, they got to touch horseshoe crabs and stuff like that. And Jack is this sort of irascible character who shows up and yells at the county commissioners. They have a sheriff's deputy remove him from the building. But his wife, who died a few years ago, she was a very well-educated and very gracious lady. And the two of them put together this big roadside attraction there. That's just, it's really impressive. And he's written quite a few books too, including one. My mother shared a lot of his books with me when I was young. For some reason, she did not share the one called The Erotic Ocean.
As soon as I read that in your book, I put that on my waiting list that I need to read. Now, you had a turtle guy in this book too.
Oh yes, the turtle god.
Peter C.H. Pritchard, called the Jane Goodall of turtles, or the turtle god, who's unfortunately had gotten on in years, and since you've written the article, he has passed on. But he had an incredible collection of turtles.
It was quite impressive to see, and you know, all of it inside or around this craftsman bungalow, sort of outside Orlando, and you know, you kind of had to know it was there, but people showed up all the time, you know. Beauty pageant winners, scientists, you know, school groups, and he would personally take them around and talk to them about where he had found things and what he'd done. And, you know, quite a few turtle species were named after him because he had discovered them.
The sad thing, and a lot of these pieces have postscripts written, is that this huge and probably very valuable from an academic point of view collection of turtles, when he died, didn't stay in Florida.
No. They found the way they found to keep it together, because they didn't want to parcel it out.
Was to
send it to an educational institution, and I believe it was California. So, sadly, not a roadside attraction in Florida anymore.
Now, there are certain people who you devoted an essay to that I just became enamored of, because they're just so unique and sort of wonderful people. Wilbur Snap. The three blind mice organist. Talk about his life. What a cool thing.
Wilbur Snap was the ballpark organist for the Clearwater Phillies minor league team. And when the Philadelphia Phillies were there for spring training, he played for those games as well. And one night at a Clearwater Phillies game, the 22-year-old umpire made a call at the plate that went against the Clearwater Phillies. And Wilbur expressed his opinion, which, you know, under the First Amendment, you have that right. By playing three blind mice.
Whoa.
And the umpire pointed at him and gave him the thumb, you know, gave him the heave-ho. And so he became the first ballpark organist ever ejected from a ballpark for his musical choices. And
but that's what he became famous for, was doing musical commentary on what's going on in the field.
Yeah, and, you know, 15 years later when I spent the day hanging out with him, people were constantly coming up and getting his autograph. Are you the guy that got thrown out? Yeah, I'm the guy that got thrown out.
Yeah, but that's the coolest thing in the world. First of all, how many live organists are there in ball games anymore? There
are a lot fewer now. Because of Wilbur, I kind of listen out for him when I go to ball games. I don't hear him nearly as much as I used to.
Now, there's some grand stories in this book. And one of them, when you sort of started out, I had no idea where it was going to go. And that was the pet cemetery and Elvis.
Yeah.
I had no idea until way later on. And then I kept thinking that's what it was going to be. And I wasn't sure at all. That was weird.
Yeah. That's one of those little hidden gems that you find all over Florida that, you know, if you know the story, you go, holy cow, I can't believe that, but it's true that, you know,
there's
a connection between Elvis and a pet cemetery in Tampa.
And weird, not just a regular pet cemetery.
You know,
no,
no, it was all part of a scam.
It was a huge scam pet cemetery.
But it did become a real pet cemetery, and it's still there. So
now there's also you sort of bring to light some really people who should be incredibly famous, but aren't. And I want to talk more about this in depth. And that's Donald J. Sobel.
Oh, yes.
Everybody should know his name, and they don't. And can you talk about that?
He's the most successful author you've never heard of. He's sort of the anti-Stephen King in that he refused to pose for pictures. He would not give TV interviews. He said, I want the focus to be on my character. And his character was Encyclopedia Brown.
Everybody's heard of Encyclopedia Brown.
Yes. Yeah, everybody knows Encyclopedia Brown, so it worked. But his point was, I don't want people to go looking for a Donald J. Sobel book. I want them to look for Encyclopedia Brown books. And they're very cleverly constructed mysteries and a delight, not just for kids, but for adults to read as well. And he was, bear in mind, he was coming up with all these little bits of trivia that Encyclopedia used to solve mysteries pre-internet. So you know, he was having to use actual books to do this,
Wow.
Instead of just Googling it.
Also,
and what I love, what I really love is that he was doing these things. He was writing these stories, a lot of them. He's living in Miami during the whole cocaine cowboy era, you know, when you had headlines in the Miami Herald, like, you know, drug dealers masquerading as cops, arrested by cops masquerading as drug dealers. And, you know, the FBI declares Key West Police Department in a continuing criminal enterprise, you know, and then I picture him folding up the paper and going back to work to write a story about Encyclopedia solving a bank robbery because of his knowledge of Civil War trivia.
Now, each book, didn't it have several stories in it?
There were ten mysteries in each book, and if you couldn't solve it at the end, you turned to the back to look up what the solution was.
That's right, because it challenged the reader to try to solve it on your own, too.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, they were all very fair, and one time he screwed up, and a bunch of school kids wrote to him and told him he'd messed up, and so he had to change that one.
But it's such
but he went around and met with classes, and I'll talk to kids. You know, that was the touring he did. And but, you know, once again, nobody took pictures of him, and he didn't want his name to be known.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guest tonight is award-winning journalist and author Craig Pittman. We're talking about his latest book, a collection of his short pieces, The State You're In, Florida Men, Florida Women, and Other Wildlife. Hey, let me ask you, as a writer, do you enjoy the short form or the long form?
I think it depends on the subject.
Like apples and oranges.
Yeah. You know, the piece on mugshots that I wrote, that needed to be short because I had a point to make and I made it. And then, you know, for the piece I wrote about Ben Henry Pooley, the sort of the rural Rush Limbaugh.
Well, I'm talking about you wrote an incredible book about the Florida Panther.
Oh, thank you.
But that's what I would call the long.
And that needed to be book length because
it was a crazy. It's because it was Florida. It was crazy complicated.
Yeah.
do you want to go back to the long form?
Yeah, I think my next book will be a longer piece. I'm thinking about writing about pythons. The python.
Oh
situation.
God! You have an essay on this, and people who don't know.
Yes.
Let me tell you. 2 years ago, the Peterson Field Guide to Eastern Reptiles and Amphibians came out, the new one, and I interviewed the author. And I grew up with snakes all in my house and stuff like that. I'm passionate about them.
And you knew they were there, right?
Well, what happened? Oh, yeah. But they kept getting loose. So stuff would turn up months later, and there was stories. But anyways, I was amazed when I looked at this book, because I know the herpafauna of North America really well. There were like 30 species I'd never heard of before. Almost all of them were from Florida. And come to find out, what's happened is people have been dumping their exotic reptile collection in Florida. And because of the climate, these things are now breeding and found all over the state. And one of them is Burmese pythons.
Yep. Well, Burmese pythons are found primarily in the Everglades and Big Cypress area. But yeah, there are other invasives like Nile monitors and Argentine tegus.
The tegus. When I asked this author, this herpetologist, I said, he said, well, you know, there's actually a lot more. I go, what do you mean? He goes, we only counted the ones where the populations were definitely increasing that they could be proved. Mm-hmm. So he says there's actually like another 50 species that are found in little local populations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these pythons are a problem. Now, I happen to love pythons. I've seen them in the wild. I've attempted to pick up pythons, and I own a truly geriatric snake, who is 45 years old.
Wow!
Is he
a walker to slither?
But these pythons in the Everglades are becoming an environmental disaster. Explain why.
Well, because they're hungry, and they, you know, they are very, very successful predators. They have successfully eliminated about 90% of all the small mammals wherever the population has grown to a pretty good size, so they're the dominant predator. They have taken out the foxes, the raccoons, you know, otters, everything that you could see in the Everglades besides pythons and alligators, they're gone. And so, you know, people you know, freak out about alligators, but I love alligators. They're our last line of defense against the invading pythons.
But haven't they been seen actually eating small alligators too?
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. And a number of times, tourists visiting the Everglades have actually seen, you know, gators and pythons battling out in the Everglades, which I think they should make part of the regular tour. But that's
if you can guarantee it would be great.
That's
now,
right.
in the essay in this book, you follow two women. I mean, people go out as like bounty hunters.
They're they are professional, paid professionals. They are working for the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, which is one of two state agencies that employs professional python hunters. And these two women, they're really interesting. They run a dog grooming salon during most of the week, and then on the weekends they pack up their camper and drive down, you know, from St. Petersburg down to the Everglades, and then spend the weekend hunting pythons. And they've been pretty successful, but they're not doing it for the money. I mean, you know, basically, you know, some nights you don't catch anything, and that's basically a minimum wage night. They're doing it because, number one, they feel like they're doing something good for the environment by helping to get rid of this invasive species. But number two, it's such a big rush. they'll drive down this levee road at 6 miles an hour, and one of them will be sticking her head up through the sunroof watching ahead while the other one drives. And when she sees a snake, she'll yell, you know, python or snake, and they'll dive out of the car, and one will grab the head and one will grab the body, and they'll just basically wrestle it for about 45 minutes while it pees and poops on them. which they refer to as the sweet smell of success, because that means you caught one if you smell like that.
It's a living.
Yeah. Well, and you can do various things with the skin. So now a number of the python hunters are developing this sideline where they're selling python skin, you know, cell phone cases and footballs and you know, purses and things like that. And then there's one woman, she's not in the story, but Donna Khalil, actually has started. She'll measure the amount of mercury in their meat, because a lot of the big ones have a lot of mercury and you're not supposed to eat them. But she'll measure the amount of mercury, and if it's below a certain level, she'll do a cooking demonstration with it on her Facebook page.
Oh,
and she'll show off how she makes her liver and onions recipe with pythons.
Now that's a Florida story.
That's a very Florida story.
That's a very Florida story.
Well, I do a weekly podcast with a guy named Chad Scott called Welcome to Florida, and Donna was one of our first guests. Come on, talk about that.
Like, how does she cook them? Is it like just basically like you cook a steak, or does she do something flambé or something?
Any sort of meat-related recipe. She's even used the eggs to make cookies.
Okay. Changing gears considerably.
Yes.
Another one of my favorite essays, and I've actually interviewed somebody who wrote an entire book about this. Luai Luai is somehow connected to Florida. Why?
Well, okay. So Luai Luai came out in, what was it, 62?
Yeah.
And a rumor went around from the Kingsmen, and a rumor spread very widely across the country that the lyrics were absolutely filthy.
I was in grade school at that time, and I'll tell you, I heard every variation you could possibly imagine.
Exactly. So this.
Now, the Kingsmen weren't the original people to record this song.
No, they weren't. They weren't. It was Richard Berry, the guy who wrote "Money Is What I Want."
Right.
So the Sarasota Educator, his daughter brought home the record, and he thought it was absolutely filthy, and he wrote this very angry letter to the Justice Department. And so they dispatched an FBI agent from the Tampa office to go to Sarasota and interview him and get a copy of the dirty lyrics. And he mailed the dirty lyrics to J. Edgar Hoover. So a Florida man sent dirty words to the director of the FBI. And then, you know, they spent 2 months looking into it and finally decided it was incomprehensible at any speed.
Well, the problem with the song, which is really funny, is that the Kingsmen essentially don't know how to enunciate.
Well, and you know, the way the microphone was set up, the way the studio was set up.
Wasn't the microphone up above them
and yelling?
The microphone was way up in the air, and they had to like yell up. You can't understand it, so it was tailor made for kids to make up lyrics that sort of sounded like that.
Yeah, it's the Beavis and Butthead effect.
I think the incredible thing is that so many people took it seriously.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the the Sarasota guy said, this is the reason our society is falling apart. This is, you know, dirty music, dirty movies. It's like, actually, yeah, what were the dirty movies of 1962? Come on.
But he's closer to the fact, because everybody's getting upset over nothing.
Yeah.
And I think that is why the country is falling apart. Now, you, we mentioned, I think I just have to return to this. We only have a few minutes left, but we talked about the mugshot. And the thing is, I think that's one of those things that's an essay a lot of people should read, because one of the things that gets passed down all the time through the internet is, you know, these Florida mugshots of these people, mm-hmm. you know, and all sorts of comments are made on them. And I'm as much bad as anybody else. And you came across a story where you actually looked into who these people were and what their life was in one case, and you're never going to react the same way.
No. I'm the one that really kind of jumped out at me was the guy who accidentally shot his fiance while they were hog hunting, and people made a big deal out of it and were asking, "Oh, does she look like a pig?" Ha ha ha. It was a serious problem for them, and they got married, but she was continuing to have medical problems as a result, and they were saying, "Thank God for the zombie trying to eat someone's face in Miami, because that finally took us off the front page."
My God!
Like, yeah.
Now, I also want to mention, for me, who is a dedicated herpetologist wannabe, there's a great story on what was called the leopard eel. Which was a new species of siren that was discovered. And that what was amazing about that, the reticulated siren, is that that was a large vertebrate that was only discovered recently.
Yeah, there was a legend that there was some sort of leopard eel, as people called it, that was in the swamps in the panhandle. And, you know, but it had never been scientifically described. People didn't really believe it existed. And then these scientists actually stumbled on it while looking for something else and spent their own time and money writing up the scientific description of it, and they named it a reticulated siren. It had these little wings on its head, like, you know, Captain America's helmet, that turned out to be external gills.
That's right. And all the sirens have that. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I love the fact that they made the point of, you know, there's lots of unknown stuff out there. We think we live in a known world, and we don't. There's still stuff out there we're discovering day after day. But the other thing was, after I wrote that they had found this thing and had put it into a bucket and then put it into some Tupperware, I got a nasty letter from a trademark attorney in
Tupperware.
New York saying, I represent the Tupperware company.
Putting your leopard eels in our product.
Well, he wanted to make sure it was really Tupperware and not some other brand.
Tupperware wannabe. I know that. That's a common problem.
Yes.
When I'm reaching for something for a newly discovered amphibian, I always make sure it's, quote, Tupperware.
And see, I think they should get this guy to endorse their product.
No kidding.
You know?
With that, we're completely out. We're completely out of time. My returning guest tonight is award-winning journalist and author Craig Pittman, and we've been talking about his latest book. There is so much more in this book than we've talked about. The State You're In, Florida Men, Florida Women, and Other Wildlife. Craig, it's a pleasure as always.
Thanks.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.